You are now listening to the Friends of Rugby podcast. Relax your anus. Balls. Thick thighs. Camille Chat. Where's his neck? Eddie Jones. You're fucked, mate. We're nice now.
Now I'm recording. 3, 2, 1.
I'm alive.
And we're live.
Saturday night, New York.
Friday nights. Welcome. You're listening to the Friends of Rugby.
With Steve and Franks.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about rugby.
Talk about rugby.
Talk about rugby today.
Yeah.
Antoine DuPont.
Andrew DuBon, he's so sexy. Yeah,
getting him. Smith. James Lowe.
We're putting that in the podcast. That's how we're started.
Yeah, we're recording, aren't we?
Yeah, we're recording now. All yeah, right. It's for real live. Here.
All right.
It's going to be a sensual one because I have no voice.
No, it's going to be smooth. It's going to be the Barry White podcasting. You want to talk about rugby?
Yeah.
You want to know the date?
Just want a disclaimer that... my voice is completely gone from yelling at teenagers all week coaching.
Stay off that.
You got to yell at them.
Yeah, you do.
But what is the date?
Does it matter? It's the 5th of May.
There we go. We've been kind of slacking on that lately.
Not really. I sneak it in.
Do you?
Yeah, at just the not end? At the same time.
At the end of the podcast. Happens. Oh, yeah. By the way, it's blah, blah, blah.
Whatever.
Just to make it sure happens. People know.
It's the 5th of May. It's the 5 of the 5.
Is it?
The 5 of the 5.
Isn't there a bunch of memes? I haven't seen, it's going to be May. I haven't seen that.
I haven't seen a bit.
Isn't the 4th, May 4th,
like a Star Wars day?
Yeah, I haven't seen anything of that.
I don't like Star Wars.
People have been slacking.
Mm.
Gen Z or what is it? Gen Z?
Which ones are they? The young ones?
I can't remember. Is it Gen Z is before us? Because you and I are millennials.
Mm.
And then there's Gen Z and then there's fucking Alpha. I don't know what the fuck they're called.
The Omegas.
Yeah, they're like, fuck that. Memes are for old people. Yeah, let's talk about some rugby because we had a lot of exciting rugby.
Felt like less rugby, but more excitement.
Yes.
It was condensed rugby.
It was actually nice.
Two big games.
There's two big games two that really focused. That really had
huge games. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll start with Leinster versus Northampton. Mm.
Tell me what you think.
First of all, Northampton was lucky to be there.
Okay.
Because the Bulls kind of gave it to them.
What?
Yeah, well, it was the Bulls that went to Northampton, right? Yes, it was, yeah, right?
Yeah.
And they kind of like fucking threw that game.
Yeah.
And then made Courtney Laws go down conspiracy lane there.
Yeah, they did a bit.
So
I don't agree with your statement, by the way. I think Northampton deserved to be in that semifinal.
Yeah, but we didn't get to really see who really deserved to be there between those two. Because
you deserve to be there if you win the fucking game of rugby, and they did. And they did
against a weakened Bulls team.
They're being investigated. It's under investigation. Don't worry about it.
The investigation will come through.
Investigation pending, and that meant Northampton could rest a bit because they played a weakened team.
Well, so they would have played in that quarterfinal.
Yeah.
And then they had to go the next week and play a big game, which they won.
Yeah.
And then they had to do this one.
Mm.
While Leinster was resting everyone, sending kids to the slaughter in South Africa.
It worked. They felt like Leinster scraped it a bit at the end there, though, didn't it? It wasn't a comfy
win.
There's
a few things to talk. There's a few points there about that that I want to talk about. But at the beginning of this game, Northampton were a fucking disaster.
Mm.
Like, they looked like they just started playing rugby.
I just read a thing. They were practicing hurling in the week to show respect. And I was like, yeah, I get the historical and maybe some English guilt or whatever. But, like, fucking practice rugby. Like, the fuck are you doing? You can read your history books when the game's finished, all right?
To make up for our country mowing down some people at this fucking stadium. Yeah. We're going to play some hurling.
Yeah. Like, I don't know.
There was like so many knock-ons and handling errors. There was times when just catching the high ball in general.
Yeah.
Like Leinster were putting so much pressure.
They did their homework.
On Northampton.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Mm.
The only thing is, like, time's going on. Like, they scored, like, 3 tries, I think. Like, right off the hop. Was it just 2 in the first half?
No, it was... I think they were only on 3 points at halftime, weren't they? Am I wrong?
No. They were more than that.
Oh, okay.
So, it was like... let me see how this goes here. I should have pulled this right up. When I did... Because, yeah. So, by halftime, it was 15-0.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it was 15-3.
Yeah.
Smith slotted one in.
Yeah.
Right? So... the first half is all Leinster.
Mm, it's all James Lowe.
It's all James Lowe and James Gibson Park.
And to be fair, James Lowe's tries, as good as they were off Northampton mistakes as well, right?
Yeah, because I think it was the first try where they caught Northampton like with their hands in their pants.
Yeah.
Because there was a penalty and then they're kind of dicking around and then all of a sudden James Gibson Park just like fast takes it.
Yeah.
You know, what's that?
Tap and go. Yeah.
Just taps and goes and then gives it to Lowe and scores it in.
Yeah. And the next one was an intercept. Came off an intercept anyway, didn't it? That's how it all started. Yeah.
But Northampton were sleeping everywhere.
Yeah.
It looked like at some points they were scared to catch the ball.
Mm. The occasion got to them. 82,000 fans is fucking impressive as well.
Yeah, it was pumping in there.
And how many of those do you think were Northampton fans?
There probably was a bit.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. But that's an intimidating Irish crowd, though, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I wouldn't want to be there.
No.
Repping a Northampton jersey.
Feeling guilty about the way you've mistreated the Irish.
You're just sitting in the middle of it wearing your like white and red English jersey.
Yeah.
Let's go! I would do that.
Yeah. Dressed in your Crusader knight armor.
Yeah. Fucking just ready to go.
Yeah.
Balls of steel.
Yeah.
But the thing that was going on in that game, as it was kept going, it was all Leinster, but no points were coming.
Mm, they were less clinical then than they normally are.
So it was 15-3 at half.
Mm.
And like another shocking thing too is like you get into the second half and you're at 50 minutes into the game and the Irish announcers completely wrote off Northampton.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, this game is done. There's nothing really they can
do.
It's
like they jinxed it, isn't it?
They did. As soon as they did that, they fucking like 8 minutes later, like fucking the Northampton like score.
Yeah.
And they're like, and then they score again.
Yeah.
Right? It was kind of like concerning. And then another thing too was when Leinster went to the bench, the quality dropped off quite a bit.
Mm. For Leinster?
For Leinster.
You think so?
Yeah, because you're looking at this Leinster bench.
Yeah.
And they're missing some players. Like, Ringrose is injured.
Yeah.
Hugo Keane is injured. Even though...
Yeah.
Fuck, what's his name?
Frawley
was a rock star.
Yeah.
That day. He was even playing injured. He was, like, injured for, like 10 minutes on the field. He was all fucked up. Mm. There was a point where he was, like, injured and laying on the field. They had to stop. They stopped the play.
Yeah.
And the ref's getting the play going again. All the players are like, he's fucking down over there, right? And he's like, no, keep going.
Comes and whispers to him. He's like, you have to get up. Yeah. There's no one else.
But when you look at their bench, they have Jack Conan and Ronan Keller, who are really like the two like Irish internationals coming off that bench. Right? Mm. Keane Healy is... like on that bench too,
yeah.
But I feel like Keelan Healy is just like he has to be in the Ireland squad because they have no one else, like as a quality, right?
It's hard to take that seriously. It's hard to say someone like Jack Conan is not a good sub.
No, he's class. But that was the only two that they could like.
Mm. But most teams can't bring on three Ireland internationals.
Because I don't like Al Toa.
Yeah,
yeah. Jason Jenkins, I don't like him.
Yeah,
like these guys are not like up to stuff. Like Al Toa, kind of feels lazy on the field.
He actually in the final against La Rochelle last year, I feel like him coming on was kind of the difference, actually, in terms of La Rochelle kind of just edging it. I think he's good, but yeah, he is a drop off.
I feel like he's a drop off when you bring him on. Like when you take off
Porter.
No, Furlong. You take off Furlong,
yeah,
and he comes on, and it's just a fucking drop, especially in output.
Yeah.
Because Furlong's like giving his heart and soul, his mind and body. Like he's giving everything to that game, right? And then Al Toa is like making, he kind of feels like he's, to me, he's like a making a paycheck player.
A little bit of a mercenary.
Yeah. He's like, I'm just here to, you know, I'm making money, right? And they struggled. Like, the quality dropped significantly in the second half. Mm. And I think there's an intensity that Leinster bring to the game that they can't keep up for 80 minutes.
I want to talk about that in the Toulouse game, actually, because they Leinster and Toulouse feel like that. Like, they'll put you to the sword in 20 minutes in. Yeah. And they kind of go, okay, we've done our job now. Let's just defend.
They're like the guy that bangs the girl with and he does like the fast, you know, rabbit humping, and then he gets off real quick. He's like, yeah.
Did you enjoy that? Done. I had a good time.
It's like, well, we have the whole night. Like, you're done. Like, no, I'm good.
And he's asleep.
I got like 300 pumps in there in like 3 minutes.
My Fitbit's going crazy.
Just pumping a minute, you know, like,
well, that's an image I don't want to fucking remember. Thanks.
Just blow their load in the first 3 minutes. Like, that's how it felt. Like, they just like, and Ireland plays like that too. Mm. You notice how Ireland comes out real hard off the gates, and then in the second half they're kind of like, sometimes they go into survival mode.
Yeah.
And the bit concerning there, like, is for next week too, especially for Toulouse.
Mm.
But I think you kind of saw the same thing with Toulouse too.
Yeah, we did. I think they definitely dropped off. But, you know, Harlequins as well, to their credit, they are good at coming back into games. And I think Toulouse did what they had to do to just put Harlequins back in their box, helped by some Joe Marler idiocy. But let's go back to anything else you want to say about Leinster, Northampton, though, because...
Yeah, there is something.
I don't want to blow my load metaphorically on Toulouse just yet.
The best players for Leinster are the Kiwis.
yeah,
which is unfortunate.
I mean,
it's good, but it's like it's kind of like like they're like by far like Lowe.
James Lowe is
fuck,
fair play, like he's good.
And Gibson Park are like X factors.
How many people score a hat trick in a Champions Cup semi-final? James Lowe does.
Kiwis,
I guess. Yeah. Do you know what I was thinking as well? Leinster in that first half an hour, those two James Lowe tries, they kind of played like New Zealand. Like, they lived off mistakes and were so fast and clinical in the chaotic moments, right? And, you know, that was dictated by two Kiwis, Gibson Park and Lowe, right? So they've almost got, like, you know, they've got the Leinster blueprint of really good defense, really clinical gameplay, but now they can pounce on you when you make mistakes. Like, it's an all-court game, right? So
their defense is also...
Their defense is unreal. Yeah.
And I know they're playing in a different defensive system.
Yeah.
Like, they're changing it up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Since Niabar came in, but that thing there, it's turning into something like next year when you're able to pull off, when you take off Joe McCarthy and put in RG Snyman.
yeah. Gary Ringrose is injured. Don't worry, we've got a Barrett coming in.
Yeah, they have, because like James Ryan is injured too.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah. Hugh Keenan injured. Yeah. Ringrose injured.
Yeah.
But the guys that they had starting were all class.
Yep.
Like everyone, especially in that first half, the second half too, they were just everything they were doing. They're just so clinical.
They are clinical.
Like,
well, like you said though, they left points on the field there. Did they left unscored points out there in that first sort of half? I think.
Yeah, I think the way that Leinster played, especially for the first like 60 minutes, that game should have been, the score should have been way higher. But it's kind of like discredit to Northampton. Because they are a good team.
I don't want to shit on Northampton too much. They had a wobbly first half, but those tries they scored, like, that was Northampton scoring tries. That wasn't Leinster shit in the bed or anything. Northampton play.
The one thing you notice when you're watching Northampton is their speed. They have to be the fastest rugby team.
They remind me of Australia in their heyday.
They're just like noticeably fast. Like, they're just noticeably quick. Like, you don't, like, I know there's fast teams.
Yeah.
But they're like noticeably fast. Like, they're just...
Their breakdown speed has to be better than Ireland's.
It's insane. Yeah, like, they get that ball immediately. Of the whole game is nuts.
Yeah.
And you can see why they're so successful.
Yeah.
Because no one's playing like that.
Nobody is. Not in the Gallagher.
No, their decision making, like, who's like, I don't know who the Northampton coach is, but like, whatever they're doing there is super smart. Like, they're playing at a speed level that's like insane. Like, it's noticeable.
Yeah. No, it is.
Right? Like, you'll be
and
like...
And their fitness is there. I felt like even though that was a close game at the end, Northampton looked fitter at the end than Leinster
did. Their speed and their fitness brought them back into the game.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Their speed and fitness, like, kept them in the game, and it brought them to almost winning the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they kind of shell-shocked Leinster at the end.
Yeah, they did. And
it's Leinster looked tired.
Yeah, they did.
And they had to, like, keep... like guys, like they had to like watch where they were subbing guys out because they you know the quality was dropped down significantly.
Yeah.
Also, Ross Byrne at 10 for Leinster is, he kind of reminds me of George Ford.
Yeah, I'm not super convinced. I think he's playing in such a good team that it hides some of his weaknesses.
Because you got like these dynamic guys like James Kitson Park,
yeah.
James Lowe out there.
Yeah.
Even fast, loose
players.
Yeah. Even Robbie Henshaw. Robbie Henshaw was fucking amazing this game.
Yeah.
Right? And then you got Ross Byrne that kind of, I feel like he doesn't have any X factor to him. He does everything well.
Yeah.
And then that's it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I kind of want like Leinster.
I want one
play.
Of the training panelists. I want to see Prendergast have a little game. It's not going to happen in a Champions Cup semifinal.
No.
But I want that. I know what you mean. I want a running 10 who suits playing off Jameson Gibson Park.
Yeah. I don't want a safe 10. That's the problem. I think that's what held them back from scoring. Like, because he's like not good at like, yeah, you need that X factor.
He's predictable, I think.
He's predictable, yeah.
He's predictable. And that's not what... I mean, that's historically a bit what Leinster like, but now they've got a much more open game.
Like, if Leinster had Finn Smith playing for them...
Yeah.
Because he's got X factor.
He does.
Finn Smith has X factor.
He's a modern 10. He's like a Marcus Smith. He's like an Entermac. Like, you know, he's fast. He'll take it to the line.
I really hope Borthwick, like, really gives this kid a chance.
I think he will now. Yeah, I think it's
like
him
you just
Smith.
Can't deny how good he is.
No, and him and Mitchell are an excellent combination, right? So yeah, I mean, I am a bit gutted Northampton lost that one because they played the way they did in the second half, in the first half as well, could have won that. I know it's a hypothetical, but
I don't think you could have. I don't think any team was going to play good the way Leinster were playing.
Yeah,
the pressure, the constant like because you didn't watch the game.
No, I watched the extended highlights.
Yeah, I watched the game. The pressure that Leinster were putting on them was insane. I've actually, it's been a long time since I've seen a team just like bully another team like that.
Mm.
Right? It was just, they did not give, the confidence that Leinster have in their squad is, and how clinical they are.
You never felt like Northampton were going to win.
I never felt like they, until they started coming back at the end.
Yeah.
And that I never felt that Leinster were going to lose this game.
Really?
Right? And then it kind of took me a bit to realize, like, when Northampton were coming back, I had to remember, like, oh, you know what? Northampton are a good team.
Yeah.
I have forgot that. I'm like, they're not playing the Dragons. They're playing, like, Northampton Saints.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The best team in the Prem right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot. Like, they are actually really good.
Because Northampton lost the week before, didn't they, as well? Kind of a little bit unexpectedly.
I bet that was from, they're probably resting some guys for this game.
Yeah, probably. I'm just thinking, like, maybe they lost a bit of momentum as well, you know, because they were kind of
Leinster didn't. Those guys had like 2-3 weeks off.
Yeah, but none of those guys played. They weren't just resting players. They rested the team, didn't they? That's different, isn't it? Like, they do have a whole second team they can just throw in and just rest their first team, so it's not going to affect their confidence too much. But yeah, I don't know. I think we both predicted Leinster winning that game, so not too surprising.
The weekend went how we predicted.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, they were kind of up against the odds on these ones.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Northampton would have beat the Bulls.
I think I'm making more out of that than... I think they would have beaten the Bulls.
I think you kind of robbed of a...
We definitely got robbed of a good quarterfinal.
Yes.
Or whatever it was, the last 16, whatever it was. We definitely got robbed of a good game. But I think Northampton at home would have beaten the Bulls.
Because I was like, for sure, Leinster were going to beat Northampton.
Yeah.
I was really confident about that. Now, if like the Bulls came with like an A team and Northampton beat them,
yeah,
that would have built me up to being like, oh, I don't know.
Mm.
Like if they like beat them, and if they beat them like soundly, I'd be like, fuck,
yeah.
Leinster are in trouble.
I think the Bulls, had they made that semi against Leinster, it would have been a very different game because the Bulls are a big physical team. It's hard to bully them. Whereas Northampton, like you said, are a much faster team, not as known for their physicality as much as the Bulls are. It just would have been a very different game, you know?
I would like to look, you know what I'd like to look at for the Champion Cup finals?
Yeah.
I would like to see how many times each of the three leagues were represented in the finals.
I think you find that stat pretty comfortably.
I
think it's mostly French teams.
Like how many times like URC teams have been in the final?
Mm.
Like who has been in the final the most? I would probably, if I had to, if you had to ask me without looking, I'd say top 14.
I think so. Yeah, I'm not looking. I think so too. You got to remember though, like the URC, as much as Leinster are really good and Munster have had their history there, it drops off quickly because of money. And but the top 14 and the Gallagher, they have a lot more money and they have a lot more teams who've got budgets to compete at that level, right?
Yeah.
So it's not really like for like. It's hard to compare those two, you know? But I wouldn't be surprised if it's French teams, you know?
Because they got all the money. Yeah,
basically.
They got all that money.
But that's a bit of a Debbie Downer. Let's talk about Toulouse and Harlequins. Nearly fucking forgot who played then. Which we both watched.
I felt bad for the Harlequins when we first started watching this game.
It looked like it was going to be a bit one-sided.
Yeah, it did. It still kind of was.
Yeah.
But fuck. Like that first like 10 minutes.
Within seconds. That was sublime. That first Toulouse try, like that for me is why I think they'll win the final. Because they can just do insane things from anywhere on the field. Like a little loop play and then a pass that skips out three guys to the wing. Like... that is some nice rugbying.
Well, they scored 5 tries in the first half.
Yeah, yeah. They did. They don't think they scored any in the second. No, they did, didn't they? They scored.
Fuck. And, oh, man. Yeah, I like how you were talking about Kinghorn and how you were talking about how he just like kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you didn't talk about him before he was at Toulouse.
He was fine.
Yeah.
Like, he was a decent...
But
like,
he wasn't a rock star.
He's a fucking Galactico at fucking right? Toulouse, isn't he? Like they've turned him in. He's like the Kiwis in Leinster, isn't he? They've just got this Scottish guy and polished him up.
Because you know when he, like they started him at 10 sometimes?
Yeah.
In Scotland?
Yeah.
When Finn Russell and... what's his nuts?
Duncan
having,
Weir?
No, it? The coach.
Oh, Gregor Townsend.
Yeah, they're having like a little spat.
Yeah, and Gregor Townsend go back to his ex, Blair Kinghorn.
Yeah, and we're just like, oh, fuck, they're fucked, right?
Yeah.
It's called Blair Kinghorn.
Yeah, but he was decent, wasn't he?
He's decent, but he was, that's what he was.
Yeah.
Right?
He was
like
a
Ross Byrne.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
he
yeah.
wasn't like, he wasn't like this like yeah. fucking like amazing like superstar player that he is now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like Toulouse brought that out of him.
I think he just loves it there though, doesn't he? Like it just seems like a carnival atmosphere at Toulouse. Like they just rock up, rock stars everywhere. You play how you want. They play a good brand of like chaotic rugby, don't they? It seems very unstructured. They'll attack from anywhere.
Yeah. They're
a real swashbuckling team. And the thing, DuPont is, I know it's been like talked to death about how good he is, but one of the reasons he's good, which we saw today, is he is just everywhere on that field. His fitness is unreal. If you make a break and he's the other side of the field, he'll find you quicker than the guy next to you, and he'll just be at that breakdown.
Yeah, because one of his tries, someone got a break.
Yeah,
he got tackled right at the line.
Yeah,
I think it was it Blair Kinghorn? I forget who it was.
Yeah,
but he got tackled all of a sudden, fucking out
DuPont's
of nowhere
there.
Puff out of dust.
Yeah,
DuPont is there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
right,
yeah.
And grabs the ball, scores a try.
Yeah,
yeah, he is.
It's
always
like business-like, isn't it?
He's always where you need him to be.
Yeah.
He is like he knows exactly where to be all the fucking time.
I know.
Like, watching him play today, I was like, it's been like, I was like, he has to be the best player in the world.
He is the best player
just to
in
be,
the world. Yeah,
like,
he is.
Just watching him is insane, because there is not another player I can think of that is just like as dynamic as him.
No, there isn't.
Who has a game like him, right? Because I would, remember how we were debating if like, Aaron Smith
or DuPont,
who's better, and we're like, well, yeah. Aaron Smith is better, but fuck, watching DuPont today, I've never seen Aaron Smith do any of that shit.
I still maintain that Aaron Smith is the best nine, but DuPont is the best player in the world, because DuPont, like, Aaron Smith's pass is always crisp and accurate. Aaron Smith can break and can grab the game by the scruff of the neck, but DuPont will do things a nine doesn't need to do.
No.
And he'll do it really fucking well.
He does
well.
More, which makes him more, yeah. probably a better scrum half, because he has all those
tools.
Yeah,
maybe. I think, I'm not saying that I think Aaron Smith is better than DuPont. I'm saying, like, if DuPont is out of the equation because he's better, he's the best player in the world, then Aaron Smith is the best nine. But DuPont is the best nine and the best player in the world, is what I'm saying.
Because he's just fucking incredible to watch.
Oh, I know. When he got headbutted in that
it's like
ruck,
he has superpowers up there.
Yeah. And I hope they last forever as well, because he's still young, right? And I thought Entomac had a good game as well. Like, that's a really good pairing.
Combination, yeah.
Yeah, it's a hell of a combo. Jack Willis had a good game as well. England must be weeping.
Yeah, to have someone Jack Willis in there
yeah.
playing like that, not in the England squad, is fucking bullshit.
It is a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, you're missing, because he plays 8, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one of their weak points is 8. And they got this like rock star just sitting at Toulouse.
Yeah, and contrast that with just in that same game, fucking Dombrandt having a bit of a 7 out of 10 game. Like, he needed to have the best game of his life.
These
you know?
these eligibility rules in, because we're coming now into the era of money.
Oh, right? I know.
Rugby is becoming into the era. We're getting in the money era. We were talking about this earlier.
The mercenary years. Here
they come. Pride isn't enough. Pride isn't enough anymore. It's all about fucking money. Yeah. And in the era of money, eligibility rules don't make sense.
They get weakened, don't they?
Players are going to go where they're going to make the most money. And if you want these players playing in your country, they're not going to stay because of pride.
No, it's getting that way.
Yeah.
It still exists, but you are right. It's getting that way. Like,
there's only two teams in the world that still have a pride grasp.
Who's right?
That's South Africa and New Zealand.
Tell that to Duane van der Merwe.
He wasn't picked.
Tell that to Schumann.
He wasn't picked.
But he didn't stay around, though, did he, to find out?
He wasn't even, because he wasn't on the radar.
No, but leaving the radar is his decision, though. You know, could have stayed in South Africa because he wanted to play for South Africa, went to Worcester Warriors a long time ago.
The only thing outside of that would have been Jean Klein from Munster.
And CJ Stander, also in Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like...
But CJ Stander wouldn't have made the Springboks.
Well...
You look at those units they have.
Yeah, he was a bit small, but he was a cannonball, though.
He was a cannonball, but they have their fair share pick.
They have height requirements.
But when it comes down to the jersey draw, the All Blacks and the Springboks still have that aura of how pride will still draw those players.
I think you're not talking about Ireland enough here, because not only do people who are Irish qualified not play for other teams, except maybe Ben Healy, but they don't even play outside of Ireland in
because
the club level.
Ireland has money.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's why you don't see Irish players playing. Well, you see Irish players in the Prem still.
It happens.
Yeah, it still happens.
Yeah.
But they're only leaving when they know they're like on the outskirts of the Irish team.
Yeah.
Right? So.
But you've got guys like Jack Conan who.
Money. Yeah. Jack Conan's staying at Leinster because of money.
Leinster have 26 quality 10s and they're all just hanging around in the changing rooms.
Because of money.
Yeah.
They want that money. They also have, like, the club is, like, a thing.
It's a big thing.
Yeah, club, the club cult that they have there, the Leinster cult, like, they suck you in. It's basically Scientology for rugby. Yeah.
You'd rather be winning on the bench at Leinster than losing somewhere in England, wouldn't you?
Hands down.
Yeah.
But we got to get back to this fucking...
Yeah, sorry. So, but I do have a couple more things to say about the Quins-Toulouse game as well.
Yeah.
Because I think, like... Harlequins coming back into it. You know, we were sat there going, okay, this game's done and dusted about half an hour in. And then Quins do their thing and they start to come back. And then there was moments where I thought, there was a single moment. And for me, it was when Joe Marler gets the ball, goes on a little rampage, and that he kind of rolled back the years a bit and he even looked really sharp and quick at the breakdowns. I thought, oh, Joe Marler's really up for it. Then he fucking slaps Sergio Ramos on the back of the head and gets a penalty for it. And like, that was the kind of the moment for me. You know, it was like a little bit of frustration boils over and you could have had a chance to, you know, they needed one more try. And you know what Quins are like? They get within punching distance in the last 5 minutes. They might win that game, could win that game. But there was just a little bit too much frustration, a little bit too much, a lack of game management that just
that
meant
really
to
sets,
lose knew what they're doing.
That's really what sets the great teams from the good teams, right?
Yeah, how you handle the pressure.
Decision making like that.
Exactly.
Like, to be a successful... rugby team these days, you have to be, your discipline has to be spot on.
Exactly, because you know you're going to play the game of your life to win. You have to, but it's not about that as well, is it? You have to manage your emotion as well,
because I know the Southern Hemisphere is like trying to fight that.
Yeah, they are. Yeah,
because they don't like that, how like discipline makes games now.
Yeah
But like, if you're going to be a successful team, like, you have to have your discipline on point. You can't do stupid shit like that.
No.
Like, what's that guy's name, Walker? Yeah. Jack Walker.
Yeah,
like, fuck, I would have been so pissed if I was like his teammate.
If he injured DuPont and you couldn't play the final, like, that guy would have been beaten up in a parking lot in France somewhere, like, you know, like, that was so stupid.
And like, oh man, if especially like, just getting back, sorry, I'm gonna sidetrack this for a little bit too.
Yeah,
to do this,
we do that,
these 20 minute cards here.
Yeah,
right, you're gonna see like DuPont is gonna be like a fucking like target, like a hit target.
Yeah
right, if the 20 minute reds come in, like, who, he's such a factor in the game, like, who wouldn't want just to fucking take him out for a 20 minute red?
Yeah, 100%.
It's a 20 minute red.
Yeah, like, that's probably three tries as far as DuPont's concerned.
Yeah.
You know?
It he's really worth is. Like, what is it? Someone said he's like worth like 10 or 15 points a
every
game.
Every game.
Yeah, every game.
Yeah, and that's a bit conservative.
Yeah.
That's a bit conservative, honestly. Yeah. The amount of assists he's involved in, not
who
just tries.
Who wouldn't want to send a guy out there?
Yeah.
Fucking take
We're
him
gonna
out.
See the return of enforcers. You're going to have a guy whose job it is to go and injure DuPont, take a 20-minute red, and then someone else comes on who may be even better than them. Like, they've got a guy on the bench who's really good. Bring him on. Like, don't worry, DuPont's out of the game.
Because hands down, like, because France and, like, the Northern Hemisphere teams are fighting this 20-minute red.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we don't want this.
No, I don't
want
it.
Because, fuck, they see that shit. Yeah. They're like, they will fucking hunt our players.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? We don't have a fucking 1,000 DuPonts. No. Right? Yeah. Like, New Zealand can just pull a fucking, another Aaron Smith right out of their pocket, right? They have endless talent.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so they're okay with sacrificing players, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, that's fine. We'll sacrifice players.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, no, we can't because we only have one DuPont. We don't have, like, a fucking machine.
Yeah, this is a once in a generational talent.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
We don't have conveyor belts of DuPonts coming out like New Zealand, South Africa do. It's like, oh, when one lock goes down, another fucking super lock comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah, and this one's taller and stronger.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think even Itzebeth is the pinnacle of the locks in South Africa? No, there's probably fucking 30 of them waiting in line.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To come out of like their stardom
and a
right?
bunch of man even playing in South Africa.
Yeah,
you know.
So
no, I agree. I don't like the idea of the 20-minute red for all the reasons you just said. It opens the door for targeting players,
yeah,
doesn't it?
It'd be like assassination attempts on these fucking players.
And here's my thing: like, if you get a red and yet it kills the game. Don't get a fucking red. Play by the rules. Don't be a dirty player.
I
you
think
know?
The argument with that is the consistency.
And I agree with that.
Right.
But that's, you can't, you know, if we believe in the ability of referees to get better and the refereeing of our game to get better, that's what we should put faith in.
But
you know? We shouldn't shit the bed and go, fuck it, 20-minute reds.
Yes. I think they fixed that too with doing the part where the ref just fucking gives a yellow right away.
Yeah.
Keeps the game going.
Yeah.
And then you got a panel of guys up in the office reviewing stuff and making that decision.
They're having a little board meeting to decide if it's a red and they've got enough time to do it.
Yeah, they have enough time to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
To make sure they got 10 minutes to like go over it.
Mm.
You know, look at the footage. They got a panel of guys up there so they can review it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best way to go about it.
Mm, right? I agree.
Because people will complain that things aren't consistent. There's stupid reds, and then there's things that should be reds that aren't reds.
Yeah.
And then there's like reds, all sorts of shit, right? Like people are like all over the place with the, because the coaching's not consistent.
Yeah.
But that's rugby. I think that's one of the great parts about rugby is the ref's always different.
Yeah.
So the game's always different.
Yeah.
It's like, you always like when you're playing an online game and the map's always different.
Mm.
Like that's like the ref.
The maps. Shit, it's this map.
Today. Yeah. It's so like refs are different. They have different styles of how they're coaching. I mean, how they're reffing the game. And I know there's like the rule books, but like the thing about rugby is it's so dynamic of a sport.
Yeah.
Like this really opened my eyes because I've had to coach for the last month. I've had to coach 30 kids that have never seen rugby. Mm. They didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
So they had no foundation, nothing of rugby. And so I'm trying to teach this sport to these kids that have, and I can't even relate it to other sports.
No.
I can't relate it to football because they're so different. I can't relate it to soccer. I can't relate it to hockey. I can't relate it to anything.
Yeah.
It's
so
completely fucking different from anything. Because like there's things that transition from other sports, right?
Yeah.
But rugby is, there's so much going on in the game. There's so many things happening. There's like 50 million different things happening at once.
Yeah.
And it's all completely different from every sport.
Mm.
And to like have a ref, like every ref coach that game the same is impossible.
It is. I was coaching the Mall the other day and a couple of the guys have only kind of come to our club recently. And yeah, you're exactly right, because I was telling him about like how you can't just tackle, you can't just bring down the Mall like you can tackle a guy in open play, right? And that kind of blew their mind. And it's like, in every other sport, these are the rules they apply for all of the game. In rugby, it's like, oh no, we're on phase 2B of the game now. These rules now apply, those rules don't apply. Like you have to change the way you operate in different parts of the game, right? And it is understandably difficult. I do disagree a little bit though about what you're saying about there are different styles of refs. I think one of the problems we have is there are different styles of refs. And I think what the referees need to do is all get together and say, we each need to have the same fucking style.
Oh, you don't think they don't do that?
I mean, I'm sure they try.
The game is too dynamic. Like, I think with like longtime rugby fans that grew up with rugby, that understand rugby, that rugby is like part of their lives growing up.
Yeah.
You don't understand I don't think you guys take into account of how fucking dynamic the sport is compared to other sports.
I mean, I see the difference.
It's impossible for a ref, it's physically, for a human being to coach it the same way, because it's just so many things are happening. The ref can't catch it. The ref's going to catch one thing or the other. And every situation is so like different from the other one.
Yeah.
Because there's just so much happening on the field.
I have a solution for that. And I've been thinking about this. AI. I was watching AI, maybe. I wouldn't be surprised. No, so I was watching a playoff hockey game the other day, right? And there's two refs on the ice, right?
Yeah.
And they don't have a little power balance thing going on.
The linesman.
But that's the thing. There's a hierarchy in rugby refereeing, right? The referee on the field is the boss, and the linesman can say stuff. And there's criticism against linesmen who don't say enough. There's criticism against linesmen who talk too much. I think have two refs on the field, especially at the scrum. You have one either side of the scrum. Because the ref half the time doesn't see it collapse on the other side and will give the penalty to the other team. If you just have two refs during the scrum, I think that fixes a lot of problems.
What the fuck's the point of TMO?
But the problem is the TMO can't just like...
They have camera control. They can watch every angle.
They can, but...
Right?
I
don't think you need another guy running around getting in the way. Right?
What if it was a drone with a little voice box on it?
It would just be the TMO.
Sprayed black and white. TMO, but it's live. It's live.
The TMO would be looking at it.
There's a little voice box on it and goes, hey, referee, did you see that?
This like buzzing
thing. It's like a little AI robot helper, you know? It's like in Halo. It's like a little floating blob that talks to the Master Chief, you know?
I don't know. I think that implementing the TMO more into the game, assisting the ref, could do it. I think they're doing the right thing when the ref's just sending the card to the box, so he can keep reffing the game. Like, you guys figure out if this was fucking all right or not.
Yeah,
I'm gonna keep reffing this game. I'm gonna keep this game going. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, but then you're looking at it becomes like alternate timeline rugby, then, doesn't it? Because like they'll be calling things back. Like you make your three or four phases, they call it back. You go again, you call it back three or four phases.
No, I'm
later.
Talking about the going from a red to a yellow to a red.
Just that.
Yeah,
and I like what
if they're going to make calls on the field too.
Yeah.
Like, and they call the ref, hey, there's some kind of thing that happened here. You should look at this. Yeah, there needs to be rules. I mean, there is rules of how many phases you can go back for something, right?
Yeah.
And they have to be more choosy on that, too.
They do have to be more choosy on
that. Yes, that's a situation that's not a style thing.
No, it's not. You didn't referee this properly.
Yeah, you didn't referee this properly.
And it's like the call it rule. It's like there is a rule there and just none of the refs enforce it. And like if you just reinforced it, like they would resolve that very quickly, right?
Yeah.
So today, when DuPont gets his head smashed, guy goes off for just a yellow card, right? I think a way to solve that is every single yellow card, and this might sound dramatic, is a bunker review. And that just means the ref shows a yellow, it goes off for review, and he doesn't have to worry about it. And 90% of the time, those yellow cards, all the TMO's got to do is, don't worry, that's just a yellow. But we do have the opportunity to review it, right?
Yeah, because like Walker, he's going to get a red for sure.
I thought that was
it's going to get reviewed.
I thought that was a red, to be honest.
Yeah, it's going to be red.
Direct contact, shoulder to the head.
It's
you know?
It's definitely, there's been less...
controversial ones.
I think there was a red given in the New Zealand-Ireland game.
Yeah.
In the one in New Zealand.
Yeah.
And it was like an accidental headbutt.
Yeah.
With two players.
Mm.
And that was a red.
Was that Aki getting a red? I can't remember.
No, it was. I think it was against Bundy Aki.
Right.
Like someone ran into his and they face planted with each other.
Yeah.
Whatever. The New Zealand player got a red card.
Yeah.
For an accidental, his face got in there. He should have been lower.
Mm.
Right. But that was red.
Mm.
And then you're telling me that Walker fucking like
shoulder bang to the face.
Yeah. It's not a red.
Yeah.
So you see those two things.
Yeah.
Like come up. Like, that's what people are pissed off about.
And I feel
about.
Like that's what the bunker system has fixed, mostly. That's what I'm saying. Every single yellow becomes a TMO review decision.
Because
right?
that bunker system wasn't in effect back then.
No.
So he would have been able to give a yellow.
Yep.
And the bunker would have went up there, and they probably would have stayed a yellow.
Yep. I agree.
Right? And so it would fix games. It would fix games. Like, you wouldn't have had that situation.
And that's why it annoyed me that they didn't review that one today, because I thought we were on the right track and I saw that.
Because the ref made the decision with the TMO on the field.
So take that decision away from him and just say, just as soon as you give any kind of yellow, we're just going to check it.
Yeah.
Right? And you don't have to worry about it. You keep reffing the game.
I think that's the best way to go about it.
Yeah, me too.
We don't need 20 minutes reds to fix the game.
No.
Because you're just going to fucking, like, DuPont's only got like 6 months left to play then.
Yeah,
they're going to fucking, every fucking international game,
yeah,
someone's going to put up a player to fucking take him out.
I'm surprised he came back on. That looked like a proper bang to the head as well.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did the HIA thing, but yeah, whatever.
And it's just, that's the way to go about it. They've been using red cards for fucking 100 years. Okay?
They used to paint pig bladders red and wave them at people.
Guys are like fucking like always complaining about how they're changing the game too much and shit like
that's
that.
That's kind of what we're doing though.
And then like, yeah, but like the red card is fine.
Mm, I know. Right? I agree.
The red card worked. Yeah. It works everywhere else.
Does it ruin games? Yes, but that's your team's problem.
Yeah.
You ruined the game by being dirty buggers.
Yeah.
That's your problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Ain't my fault.
No. And it's like, we want to go on about the product and all that. Well, you know, that's the team's responsibility to provide entertainment by not being dirty.
And I think they're getting better at giving like less shitty reds.
They are. It is getting
definitely
better slowly.
Especially the bunker system.
It is getting better. I do think it is
I'm
improving.
I'm a fan of the bunker system.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I like it. Yeah. Anyway, we're kind of excited all over the place.
We're talking about rugby. That's why. This is, you sit down with your buddies. You have a Caesar at 10:30 a.m. in the morning and you chat rugby. Like this is what the podcast is about.
This is the heart of it. Two men with very poor attention spans yelling at each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need pints.
Well, at that time we recorded after a couple of beers, we were a bit spicy and I liked it.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, the evening record.
That's the theme of this podcast, you know, two guys chatting up with your friends.
Yeah.
You know, online.
Yeah, imagine, close your eyes, you're in a pub with us. It's raining outside, there's a roaring fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got a Caesar.
Your Sunday roast dinner's coming up.
Yeah, and the two guys that can't stick to one fucking topic of conversation, but they're having a good time. Not one a long time.
One's not wearing a shirt. No, wait. I took that out too far.
Someone's hand moves onto my thigh.
Is there anything you want to talk about? any other fucking points you want to bring up about this weekend's games?
I really enjoyed that game, Harlequins Slough. That was a very good game of rugby. You know, we sometimes especially get lost like, in the narratives, and sometimes I forget to just watch a good game of rugby, and yeah. I did that today. I was like, that was class.
Harlequins kind of trying to make it a semi comeback there kind of made it exciting.
It made me believe
a little bit.
It did make me believe. Yeah.
I was like, oh, can they do this?
Yeah, but I really want to see Toulouse Leinster final now. Like, So in a way, I'm happy Northampton and Quins are out because I do really want to see Leinster Toulouse.
I'm going to try to go to this game.
I know you are. I can see it in your eyes.
As soon as I get home. As soon as I get home, I'm talking to my wife, like, hey.
You want to go to London for a weekend?
Yeah. I'm going to try to do this. It was like an 8-hour, 7-hour flight.
Yeah. And then a jet lag.
And then fly in, fly out.
It's possible. It's possible.
I really want to do it. I really want to go to this game.
You could. It's not sold out yet.
No.
Anyway, let's talk about Eben Etzebeth saying some things about Ireland rugby.
Do you want to say what he said? Because I know you you probably loved what he said.
I didn't actually.
You didn't?
No. I disagreed with him.
You disagreed with him?
Yeah. I think if you're a team and you believe in yourself and you say, see you in the final, like, fuck yeah.
Okay. Cause I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. He's like, I can't believe they rode off the All Blacks.
Yeah.
I was like, name another Northern Hemisphere team that had that much confidence.
They've beaten them the last, like every time they've met them in the last three times, like why wouldn't you believe you could beat them again?
Like, yeah, like and name another Northern Hemisphere team that had that confidence against the All Blacks.
There isn't one.
There isn't one.
France maybe, but like they'd already shit the bed. So
and they would still think that we could lose. Like to be in an era where there's a team that is dead set that they could beat the All Blacks is unheard of.
And if you don't believe you can beat them, why? What are you doing there?
Yeah.
Like I mean, I get saying that to the South African guys, and I think what it was like a bit of, we've just beaten you, we're going to beat you again. I don't think it actually had anything to do with the All Blacks. It was the Irish players saying, we beat you now, we're going to beat you again. It was their way of kind of deflating the South Africans a bit more. Of course you're going to do that. Like, people have said far worse things on a rugby field. That's the thing you go after, a bit of gamesmanship. People have been calling people's mothers whores on the field, and that's the thing you're upset about? It's not arrogant. It's like, no, we're going to deflate your ties a little more. We just beat you, we're going to do it again. See you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, he's like, no, they rid off the All Blacks. Like, good.
Yeah.
Like, don't be afraid of them.
No.
That's the problem with a lot of teams.
Yeah.
Why they lose to them, because they're, like, scared of this boogeyman, the All Blacks.
That's the kind of gamesmanship I can get on board with. Back yourself. Like, be a bit arrogant, right?
Yeah, have that confidence.
And just, they're not saying it in interviews either, are they?
Like, no.
That would be stupid if, like, Johnny Sexton was in an interview going, like, I can't wait to meet the All Blacks, the South Africans in the final. Can't wait for that. That would sound arrogant.
Yeah, you know, All Blacks are pretty much already done anyway, so.
Yeah, like, he's not going to say that, and I don't think he believes that either, right? But to say that to a South African after you've beaten beaten them. It's exactly what I would tell my team to say.
You could tell it rattled him a little bit,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. He's upset about it, isn't he? Because he's scared he's got to play them in the summer. Like, that's what it is.
Yeah, so it's kind of like... I thought it was good.
Yeah, me too.
Like that.
You were hoping I was going to say, "Oh, those arrogant Irish devils."
Yeah, I was like, because you love saying that stuff about Ireland.
That.
Oh, wow.
No, fuck that.
I'm glad you agree with me on that. Yeah, I was like, God, like that confidence is great. Like,
of course
yeah,
it is.
That's what they need. They need to think that they're fucking better than them, because like that's how you can't be afraid of these teams.
This is any sport 101. If you don't think you're going to win a game, you're not going to win a game, right?
Because this is going to be the first. Like, especially with Ireland going down to South Africa,
yeah,
this is probably the first squad ever that's going down there that 100% is like not afraid.
No,
they're going down there to do a job.
Yeah, they are.
Right.
Yeah.
Are they going to win? That's a different question.
But
are they scared of losing? Nope. They think they're going to win this.
The Irish guys, I'm proud of the Irish because they are trailblazing for the Northern Hemisphere. This has been 10, 20 years coming. We've needed a team to not only think they can beat them but actually beat these teams, right? Because it changes that North Southern Hemisphere debate. If Ireland beat them and then France can catch up a bit and England can catch up a bit, all of a sudden this like 30-year-old debate about, oh, the Southern Hemisphere is better, it goes out the window, and now it's just teams of rugby playing each other, and all of a sudden global rugby becomes a more level playing field. I'm into that. I love that, right? It's about fucking time. You know, so I would like Ireland to win for that reason. It shuts them up a bit. Oh, you come to Pretoria, it's above sea level, you can't breathe. Shut the fuck up. Like, we come to play rugby, we come to win, you know, like no time for that shit. You know?
I would be, they're coming.
Good.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're coming with confidence. And I was like, so they're all like, oh man, I can't believe the arrogance. I was like, man, that's good. Like, good on them.
That's a bit rich as well, coming from a South African. Like, I've heard some wild shit come out of South Africans' mouths, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That too. Another thing I want to talk about his that he talked about on the rugby pod, because it was a very interesting interview.
Yeah,
I was glued. Yeah. That was some good content.
I only watched the like a 3-minute clip, so I need to watch the whole thing by the sounds of it.
He mentioned they went into the details of the culture of their team.
Yeah.
And there is not another international side that plays with that much. Like, passion is driving them.
Yeah,
like passion and like everything they're talking about, like everything, because it was Vincent Koch,
I think.
Yeah, Koch. I don't fuck. It's like a fucking South African names. And even like we're like everything they said about the Springboks, it was just about passion.
Yeah,
like the love, like they will die for that jersey.
Yeah,
like everything and out of all their career, everything in their career, the number one thing is putting on that green jersey.
Yeah.
They can make any sort of amount of money. They can play for any club.
Yeah.
But as long as they give it their 10,000% for that fucking Springboks jersey, that's all those two care about.
And they do as well.
Yeah.
And that's, they fucking do.
I was like, that's an X factor. That's like, that's all they want. That's all they hunger for.
I'm sad because we used to have that in Wales, and I think we've lost that a bit recently. And South Africa have got that. Like, I was watching a clip from the Chasing the Sun, and Dwayne Vermeulen's talking about having his kids on the field when he's won the World Cup, like, and he's like tearing up. And I was like, those are some beautiful man tears. Like, that is exactly what life is about. Not just rugby, right? Like, you have reached the pinnacle of life moments right there. And that's what it means to him, right? That's class, you know? Fucking love that shit.
They also talked about some kind of surprising things too, about like how the diversity of the team now, like how the team is like so like racially diverse.
They've got that monkey off their back a bit, haven't they, to be fair?
They talked about this too without, like, Evan was talking about this issue on the rugby pod without bringing up the word race. But it was what he was talking about.
Yeah.
And how much that affected the Springboks.
Yeah.
Too, over time, and how that made that dynamic to the team just like fueled their like passion and stuff like that, and how it raised the popularity of the Springboks too.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting too. But man, they have like what Razzie has created. Because I think I give Razzie Rasmus the credit for creating this kind of like
meritocratic?
No, this ideological.
Yeah, that's a good word.
Like, system that he's created there.
Yeah.
This like aura he's made.
Yeah.
Like, has like that team, there's something different going on there.
He's changed the culture, hasn't he, dramatically? Yeah.
Yeah, the culture he's created for the Springboks, like these players are, there's, I just, I can't even think of another team like these, because he had Evan talking like this, right?
Yeah.
And you had Jim Hamilton on his one side.
Yeah.
Scottish international.
Yeah.
Fucking.
You're doing good.
And Dan Biggar.
Yeah.
Right. Welsh international.
Yeah.
Right. Guys that have had a ton of caps for their countries. Right. Mm. They're like, when they're like looking at him and he's talking about all this passion, this culture, this drive, this love, these guys are like completely disassociated from this kind of thing, this feeling that he had.
You think Dan Biggar is disassociated from that?
They could not relate.
I don't agree.
The way they were talking, they could not relate
to watch this interview.
I'm
taking that personally.
This love and passion for him. You can tell that their international careers were like, there is a passion when they put on jersey, obviously, but like,
you don't think Dan Biggar was passionate as fuck when he played for Wales?
Oh, 100% he did. But the level that the Springbok players are when they put on that jersey, it's a different level.
You think so?
And I can tell, like, you can just tell that they like couldn't
relate.
Jim Hamilton and Dan Biggar couldn't relate to this level of love.
I need to watch
this. They love playing for their country, but there was like this
Do you think like South Africa's socioeconomic kind of things 100%. Going? Because Siya Kolisi talks about this when they won in 2019. He was like, "We did this for our South African like brothers. Like, our country's having a rough time. We did this to you to bring our country up, to give you something to believe in." And like, you know, like you're talking about like poverty and death. It's not like in Wales where it's a bit of poverty.
That's why they couldn't relate. Because Vincent Koch brought that up too. Yeah. He's like, you know, there's so much going on in our country.
Yeah.
And for us just to bring a smile on someone's
face. It means so fucking much to some of those kids, right?
That means the world to us. That means everything to us. That means we did our jobs just to bring a smile for 10 minutes did, you know?
Yeah. Because there is some bad shit going on in South Africa, right? Like rolling blackouts and a lot of poverty.
There's a lot of fucked up shit in South Africa. And there's just like this. And Razzie has brought that into the change room.
Yeah.
He's brought those situations, those problems into the change room.
Yeah.
And he's formed the team around that to like, hey, you know, we're a glowing light.
Yeah.
And all this like darkness in our country.
It's kind of like we were talking about in that Toulouse Harlequins game. Don't worry, this will make sense. It's like, we know at international level, that Ireland-South Africa game, both teams are going to play fucking good rugby as best they can. So you know you need to win. They talk about fine margins, but it's not just about how you play. It's about the emotion you bring, the game management. And that comes from, you know, if you're absolutely gassed at 75 minutes, if you suddenly start hearing, you know, in the back of your head, you'd be like, fuck, let's go, boys. Like, going to run through a brick wall, right? Like, because you can overcome fitness if you're angry, right?
Yeah.
You can overcome fitness if you've got enough emotion in the tank.
Endorphins
right? Like,
can do a lot.
Yeah, they can, man. You know? Yeah. Like, you can lift a fucking iron bar off your child in an earthquake if you've got the adrenaline, right? They're drawing on something else that's not just training,
right? It's exactly. Like, they got that endorphin, that lifting the car off the child shit, right? Yeah. That's what they, that's like
the
somehow.
Superman energy.
Somehow, you know, Razzie, I bet you anything they've done some.
I'm getting goosebumps.
They did some ayahuasca retreats or something.
And they found
peyote shit, right? And
they found the true meaning of South Africa.
Yeah, through drugs and hallucinations, they discovered this like trauma, and then now they're bringing it on the field. But they, I couldn't stop listening to him talk because I was just like, you don't hear. And the fact how Jim Hamilton and Dan Biggar were just like, completely like disassociated from like what he was saying.
Yeah, maybe they were just in awe. They were just
because it's a different type of passion for the jersey.
I think you might have convinced me because, you know, as much as I'm being a proud Welshman and I watch all these maybe not so much now, but like watching like guys crying during our anthem and everything it means for our history and our culture and it is our national identity and stuff. But we don't have rolling blackouts and violent crime in Cardiff, right? Like it's a different ball game in terms of how it affects the players emotionally, maybe.
Yeah,
right?
like global record, like murders, rapes, poverty.
Yeah.
Like, you know, in that place. Like, you know, when those guys are grabbing that jersey and they're singing that like South African song,
it means a lot.
They're thinking about that. And Razzie's brought that into, like, that's why this team is winning World Cups. That's just why this team can, like, reach out. Like, this team get totally fucked up, lose their hooker in the first 3 minutes, and still come out on top.
And just come out angry and fighting.
And, like, it's just like the personnel in that team, like everyone is sold on that system.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's just like, it's going to be hard to top that.
I'm going to have to watch this interview, I think.
Like, cause like South Africa will lose games. They could lose to Ireland when they come in there.
Oh yeah.
But when it comes to the World Cup,
yeah.
Like when it comes to that kind of thing, they are going to be so like, they reach a different level.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, to look at it from a statistical point of view, they have lost two pool games in both the last two World Cups and then won the World Cup. No one else has done that, right? You just can't put them down. They don't lose momentum, right? Because they've got that. He's injected the truth of South Africa into their veins. And no, you've convinced me. You've convinced me.
I make a compelling.
But I didn't think Ireland were arrogant. I thought, you know, fair play. Say that again, Ireland. I like that.
Yeah, keep that up. I want to see that. Yeah. I want to see that arrogance. I want to see that confidence. I'm not going to call it arrogance. I'm going to call it confidence.
A bullish attitude. Yeah. We're going to win.
We're going to come in there and fuck you up.
Yeah, we're going to play every single one of you fucks and beat you. Yeah. I like that.
Let's get into another passion project here. I also know some things to talk to, but now I think they're not going to fit in this episode. But let's talk about.
I think I've blown my emotional load on that last one. So yeah, you have to. Yeah,
can we play the South African national anthem, please?
Yeah, that's a good national anthem as well.
It is a good one. Yeah,
we learned it when I was in primary school because my our head teacher had some South African friends.
Oh yeah,
and we were all like little Welsh kids just belting out the South African national anthem. We loved it. It's an absolute banger. Like, yeah.
Let's talk about the Welsh youth problem.
Drugs.
Drugs. And
teenage pregnancies.
And teenage pregnancies.
I think Wales has the highest teenage pregnancy in Western Europe.
That's awesome.
Just fucking keep your condoms. Yeah.
Those kids be fucking. Yeah. I wish I would have grew up there then.
I don't think it's a good thing.
I grew up in the wrong spot.
Yeah, maybe.
Should have been growing up in Wales.
Yeah, but you just use contraception and you can get
knocking
on with it.
Knocking boots.
So what's your question?
Oh, I was just reading an article about the problem with the English sniping the
poaching
Welsh.
Poaching my boys.
Poaching your boys.
It's becoming an issue. It is becoming an issue because historically you had guys who were probably born in England, had a Welsh mother or father, and they could have gone either way. And then they chose England. Sometimes they chose Wales. And you kind of thought, you know, it's a bit of a tug of war. But now there are guys who are Welsh born and bred, gone through a Scarlett's Academy, gone through a Cardiff Academy, and then Hatbury College will come along and say, come to our college, you've got a rugby scholarship, which is something we can't really offer in Wales. And they have stipulations in their contract where, like, if you want to keep your scholarship, you have to stay playing for Hatbury and you have to play for England under 20s, right? And that doesn't tie them to England. But the argument then is, well, if they make friends and they basically have their formative years in an English college, they're way less likely to come back and play for Wales. And we talked about that pride in the jersey. We are losing that a bit. A, because the money in the game, there's a bit more mercenary shit going on in the world. But Wales just don't have, you know, if you think back to 2015 when, like, Wales were on a high and we were a really good team, like, you wanted to play for Wales, you know, because we were a good team. We don't look like that anymore. We've lost some prestige, right? So it's a kind of a perfect storm for some of these young guys to go, actually, I don't want to play for Wales. And you would never hear of that before. And I think Gatlin was right when he said something like, to when they were talking about Faye Webbo. So if he doesn't want to play for us, screw him, right? Don't want him. You know, we want guys who are proud to play for Wales. But the problem is we're losing those guys. Like, you can't just keep saying that forever. We lose 3-4 more of them who are born and raised in Wales. Like, that's a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like what I said earlier. Pride points are running out now.
A little bit.
We're in the era where pride points don't get you that far anymore.
Particularly in Wales right now.
We're in the era of... And that's why we're in the era of money.
Yeah.
Pride points can only get you so far now.
Yeah.
Eligibility rules do not make sense. And you know what's proved that wrong again? South Africa.
Yeah.
Pride points, you know, like, you know, guys need money.
Yeah.
Guys want money. Guys want to go where the most opportunity is. Now, there was a thing in the article that I read about the Welsh strain, stuff like that, was the opportunity, though, that these Welsh kids are missing out. They get into English systems, and then they don't get as much playing time. They don't get as much opportunity to play high-level rugby because the systems are so big. They can get lost in the systems, right? Unless they really stand out, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to see players that aren't great yet because there's players that, like, start... They kind of, like...
They get overhyped when they're young. We do that a lot, don't we?
There's overhyped ones.
Yeah.
But there's also players that, like, kind of ride through the system, get to pro level, and then one year they just become the greatest player ever.
Yeah.
And then there's some players that are just great from the beginning. But a lot of the players that come out of their shells later in their careers will get lost in the English system.
And then it's too late to come back to Wales.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, like,
and that's happened before, actually.
The playing opportunities are, like, bigger in Wales. right? But the financial opportunities
are better in England.
Are better in England.
Much better. And I think you're saying the playing opportunities are good in Wales. Yes, you're going to get more game time, but you're going to get game time at the Scarlets or the Dragons. You're going to, like, would you rather play? So this guy, Josh Hathaway, is a good example. Yep. Like, you know, born and raised in Aberystwyth in West Wales. It's not even close to the English border. And people are talking about him. Someone said the other day he's like Lewis Rees Amit 2.0, and he's played U20
England,
and he's sort of talking like he might stay with England as well. And that's a real shame. That's a real shame because, yeah, he could get game time every week if he was in Cardiff or Scarlets, but he's getting regular game time at Gloucester, and Gloucester are, as much as they're not going to win the Gallagher, they're not going to lose every single game.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for the X-Factor players like that. Like, yeah, those guys will just get rushed in and they'll get the game time.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about the guys that are going to be good, like, down the road.
Yeah.
That aren't.
And they've been.
And they're already in the. But they've gotten sucked into the English system.
Yeah.
And are going to be great later on.
Yeah.
Right. And they're unnoticeable, but they'll just meander in the English system forever.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Those are the players I'm worried about, because there's going to be great players that are going to come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They're going to be lost in the system.
Yeah.
Right. Because if you had those players playing in Wales,
yeah,
right, like, it would fix a lot of problems too for the Scarlets Ospreys, because you have a lot of these players, good players, playing there still.
We do. Here's the thing though, it's like, you look at Cardiff, you even look at Scarlets, actually every Welsh region, we are forced to play our young guys, and it actually is working for the Ospreys and the Cardiff. They're not beating everybody, but they're getting in some performances. The Ospreys have taken some scalps, and it's because they're believing in their youth. So it's not like these guys aren't playing. But Wales, for a country of our size, we do produce an incredible amount of talent, and England are just kind of like taking a bit off the side. But some of those guys,
Exeter,
and well, Gloucester and Exeter, yeah, right? You know, Bristol a little bit as well. They've got a lot of Welsh guys historically, but it's geographically, those are the places near the Welsh border, right? So it makes sense, you know.
Cardiff and Ospreys give me major Exeter Jeep vibes.
They're going to be good in a couple of years.
Yeah. Or yeah, you know how like the Reds are pretty good in Super Rugby?
Yeah.
They were kind of a shitty young team for a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're giving me those kind of vibes. It's not Cardiff Blues anymore.
No, it's just Cardiff now.
Yeah, Cardiff, yeah, and Ospreys,
yeah,
are giving me those vibes because they're two young, really young squads.
Yeah.
And they're both like, they're not underperforming. I think they're kind of like,
I don't think Ospreys are actually like beating Stormers in South Africa.
Ospreys are awesome. Good.
Yeah.
Cardiff are like kind of like doing the whole brides, always the bridesmaid, never the bride kind of situation right now.
Heartbreaking, yeah.
But I think that's good.
It is good.
Because they're not getting slaughtered.
No.
Right? They're just not able to. The main problem with Cardiff, if you look at their games, a lot of them is just, they lose it right at the end.
Do you know what's funny as well? I watched this. There was someone posted a thing, and it was like a league table of the URC, and you had to guess what it was, and Cardiff were right at the top, and it was losing bonus points. They have 11 losing bonus points.
Yeah,
right?
So you're seeing a team that is not bad. You're seeing an emerging team. And I think like in the next year or two, you're going to see probably Cardiff and Ospreys like at the top, probably competing with Munster, Ulster, Connacht.
But to go back to what you're saying about like players getting poached to England, I think what the Welsh Rugby Union needs to do, because we haven't got an academy system that can compete with England. We haven't got a Hartbury College where you can just go and get a scholarship, right? What they need to do is go and talk to these guys. Play under 20s England, and as soon as you're above 20 and you're playing regular for Prem, we'll give you a call. Scrap this fucking 25 cap rule. We're a small country with limited resources. We need to behave a bit more like Scotland, right? We need to behave a bit more like, yeah, you can play over there, but come back and play for us for Wales. We've got you. You're a good player, right?
Yeah. Italy, Scotland, South Africa.
It's working for them, right?
It works for them.
It works for them. So I don't know why we limit ourselves like this. We do not have the resources to have a 25 cap rule. It's bullshit, you know? Maybe it was necessary 3 or 4 years ago, but it just doesn't fucking work now. Get rid of it.
Yeah, because the pride of the jersey is not the draw.
It's taken a hit.
Especially when money comes involved.
Yeah, yeah.
Because at the end of the day, like, this guy's got to like feed kids.
You're lucky if you get a 10-year career.
Yeah.
Right?
And
you better make a lot of money in that time.
Yeah. Rugby, like, it's so hard on your body.
Yeah.
It takes a lot.
It does.
It takes a lot from you. So you want to get as much out of it
as
possible.
Yeah, who can blame these guys, right? 100%. 100%.
You can't blame them.
No.
At all. So the only people to be blamed is the people making the rules where they can't play.
I blame the WRU. Like, I blame a lot of these things, right? Get rid of that fucking 25 cap rule. It's killing us.
Yeah, because they're like, oh, the English. Because you know what? Actually, now I'm thinking about it too. Because like, blaming the English system, right? Like, if that cap rule wasn't there, Feyo Oboso would be playing in Wales. Hands down. If he didn't have any sort of problems.
Like obstacle to...
Obstacle to hop, he would be... Guaranteed he wouldn't play in Wales.
I don't know. But yeah, I don't disagree. But yeah, I don't want to say with certainty, but yeah.
People love their heritage. Right?
Yeah.
They love where they're from. Like, people love that stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like, even your city, like you're from, like you're from a small town in Wales.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. No, I love that shit.
You know, any kind of chance to represent that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
you
makes
take
you
it.
Feel you want to take that. And yeah. I generally believe like most people think like that.
I think so. Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And Feyo Oboso kind of made, he made the, he didn't go with his heart. He went with his brain on this,
yeah, it was a smart decision.
Yes.
I don't doubt
that's
that.
That's what he did.
Yeah.
So instead of going with his heart, he went with his brain.
Yeah.
And he's like, this is the best decision for my life.
Yeah.
Cause like, yeah, rugby.
He's got a medical career on the go as well.
Rugby's 6 to 10 years, and my life is the rest of my life.
Yeah, and he's obviously an intelligent guy, right?
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, he wants to be a doctor. He knows what he's doing, but there must be a little 10% of him when he pulls on that England jersey and everyone's patting him on the back going, we got you, we're your boys. There's a little 10% of him going, you're not, though.
Hopefully.
I mean, I don't know. I don't want to speak for him.
I bet a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Has to be, right?
It's like how...
And maybe it's that same 10% we've lost in the Pride in the Wales jersey, right?
Well, this is
maybe
like
they
what
overlap.
What I was talking about with that Canadian kid at Montpellier.
Yeah.
Right? Not wanting to play for Team Canada.
Yeah. And you told me the reason... Oh, no, you don't. Yeah.
Well, I said it on the pod.
Oh, you did? I thought you said it. Okay. So it was an insurance thing, wasn't it? It was like a health insurance thing.
Yeah. Canadian insurance is shit.
Yeah.
So if he gets injured, his career is fucked.
Yeah.
Right? And the whole system is just shit.
Yeah. There's not enough incentive to do it because the drawbacks are too great.
Yeah.
You may as well make a lot of money in France.
Yeah. So you can't... The person to blame in this situation is Rugby Canada.
Yeah. And I same situation here. I blame the Welsh Rugby Union for... I don't blame England for looking for talent, right? I mean, it's a bit poachy.
One rule that you can like lift that doesn't like cost money.
It doesn't affect anything.
It doesn't affect anything. That's the craziest
part. It's achieving the opposite of what it's supposed to do now. It's supposed to keep people in Wales. It's not as bleeding played as that plays out, right? Like,
yeah, and it's just like, it's just frustrating and it builds up resentment.
It does.
Because now this player has to leave to make his, you know, make money.
Yeah.
And Welsh Rugby is like, fuck you. You're not allowed to play
here. Don't want you anymore.
That just creates resentment. And they're like, well, fuck you.
He's definitely not coming back after what was said in the interviews now. They were like, if he doesn't want to play for Wales, screw him. It's like, but you did put up a barrier to stop him.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not entirely as well. It's the same with Joe Hawkins, right? He signed for Exeter and he kind of got screwed immediately by that rule. And he's probably sat there going, oh, for fuck's sake, I'd love to play for Wales, right? Now he can't even play for England or Wales. You know,
he can't play anywhere.
No, he's just gonna stuck at Exeter Chiefs.
He's in fucking rugby purgatory.
Yeah. Anyway, that shit. Anyway, so yeah, I'm a little bit less upset about it now, but hopefully, I think I've got faith. I think these things will change. We'll see.
You just got to be more like Ireland, man.
I guess I do. Yeah, we need an ocean. Can we have an ocean between us? So it's harder to get to Hatbury College.
Ireland, the greatest rugby nation to ever be.
We'll see you in the final.
Is there anything else you want to talk about? Because
I was going to mention Halfpenny playing for Crusaders and being a bit shit, but I don't know what else there is to say. Really
underwhelming.
His little Crusaders are a bit shit. Halfpenny's a bit shit. He's just come back from injury. What did you expect? I don't know. Nothing else.
Yeah,
to say on that,
the only really. Story is a Havili starting at 10 there too. Did you hear about that? They wanted Havili to start at 10.
I did not hear that.
The All Blacks requested the Crusaders to start Havili at 10 because they wanted to see him play at 10.
This is Scott Robertson going back to his old club and saying, it sounds like Scott Robertson micromanaging the Crusaders. Now they're falling apart more than a New Zealand strategy.
Yeah, because I know he could play like a bunch of different, like he usually plays a center, but he can play everywhere on the field.
Yeah.
And they wanted to see him play at 10. So they're like, play him at 10.
Well, as you know, Mwanga and Barrett are kind of, they come into the end of their international days, aren't they? So maybe not a bad idea. I don't know. But yeah, I've got nothing else to say about that. Do you want to talk about Super Rugby? Are you happy?
No, I'm good.
Okay, yeah, me too. Fuck it.
We got pretty passionate this episode.
We did. There was a lot of passionate rambling.
Yeah, there was nothing really too exciting in Super Rugby.
You saying we're over? We're done?
Yeah, we're done.
Oh my
God.
Okay.
Close shop here.
Okay, it's the 5th of May. Bye.
Yeah. All right, friends. If you like the pod, like and share. Like and share the pod. Subscribe on whatever you listen in on. all the devices, and I think we're on everything almost.
Yeah.
Watch
us on YouTube. Watch us on YouTube.
It's just a picture that says the Friends of Rugby, and then just audio.
And you can't have it, you know, when you're on Spotify and you close your phone, it still plays. Like, it's a nightmare when I'm in the gym and I've got a YouTube video on and I accidentally tap my phone and the video goes away.
Oh, you don't have YouTube Premium?
I want it. I should get it because those ads do. Anyway, whatever.
So poor. Wow. You're so cheap.
How much is it?
It's like fucking $6 a month.
Oh, I might do that. Yeah.
Yeah, like, what the
hell? Well, I've got like Apple Music and Spotify, you know?
Ew. All that's right, why you, but with those apps, you just kind of pile them up, but they're all like $5-$6 each. So, you know, you're like, oh, I'm just paying things up, but you don't like think about the total that you're paying, like $190 a month.
I do think about it. That's the problem. I do think about it.
And friends, if you have any questions, you can email us at thefriendsofrugbypod@gmail.com.
Please do.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good one.